is the Day Zero update for November 22nd, 2015. I'm Filippo Vanellifo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
Yeah, and we're two episodes away from a full year of the Day Zero update podcast. It's kind of remarkable that, well, we're still going and we haven't killed each other yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Lord knows I've had it in for Teresa for a long time.
And, well, Lee, well, he just wants to murder everybody, so. Because he's Batman. But regardless, yeah, we've got a lot going on this week.
There's like two people listening to this podcast who are going to get that.
Yeah. And, yeah. We've had kind of a busy week this week, which is kind of surprising, given that, well, everybody's probably been playing Star Wars Battlefront or Fallout 4 and not paying attention to the news, but there actually happens to have been some. So, before we get to that, yeah, what have you guys been playing? I guess I might as well start us off with pretty much the exact same thing as last week, Rock Band 4. And, well, since Games with Gold things switched over this week, we had Dungeon Siege 3 come out. So I downloaded that, and I've been playing that, and it's, yeah, it's okay. I like it. I mean, it's not the greatest action RPG in the world, but it's fun enough. I don't know if you've played it at all yet, Brandon.
Oh, yes, I have.
Yeah.
When I played it, I played as Catherine.
Yeah.
The witch.
Okay. Yeah.
She has guns.
She has guns, yeah. Yeah.
Also has pistols.
Yeah. And she can switch between them. Yeah. And they want you to know who the antagonist is because they mention her like every 40 seconds or so. Mm-hmm. they just want you to not forget the fact that your main antagonist is Jane Cassander, because they'll mention Jane Cassander ad nauseum.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Crazy ass religious fanatic.
Yep. Burning things and being all magically evil and stuff. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
We know how this goes.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty much what I've been doing this week. I'm hoping that this week I'll get to play a little more, something with a bit more variety, you know, because we've got some sales coming up, so maybe I'll be able to pick up some new stuff that I haven't tried yet. So.
Mm-hmm.
More on that in a moment.
Yeah.
Yep.
How about
foreshadowing.
Yeah. How about you, Pat?
Basically the same as last week. But I did pick up the drift stage new build, and I can kind of see why they were gun shy about letting it out in its current state, because some of the physics are still out of whack. I don't know if that's if that's because of the Unity update that they did, or between builds, or something else entirely, but at the same time, it was nice to just get out and drive on a more open road than sort of the twists and turns of Sunset City in the last build.
Yeah, it's not like floating in midair anymore, so that's kind of cool. Now you're driving along mountain roads. So I got a distinct Rad Racer, you know, vibe from this particular.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So yeah, it's.
While, like a Rad Racer by way of Daytona.
Yeah. While cars aren't supposed to be able to turn in place, I'm pretty sure that's something that'll get resolved as they get further along in development. I mean, we got to still remember that this is still early alpha.
It's still an alpha, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably would have been beta if they hadn't had to switch engines in the middle of development, but you know how that goes.
It should pay off in the long run.
Yeah. It's going to make it easier for him to... you know, get it onto the PS4, the Xbox One, the Vita, you know, because they've got build options for all of those. So, yeah.
Manual transmission definitely changes it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes those drifts a little bit easier to handle when you can just downshift. So, yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how that game progresses, because, God, does it ever look good.
Yeah, we're big fans of Drift Stage here at the Day Zero update, and have been pretty much from the start.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one thing to see screenshots of this game, but in motion, it is something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This game is going to be something special.
Yep. Also sounds great, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, So how about you, Brandon?
Well, let's see. First things first, I am still playing Rise of the Tomb Raider. Finally made my way over to Siberia. Because, you know, just out of the frying pan into the fire when it comes to this series.
So, I would have lost that bet.
Yeah, after this, I'm guessing Lara will probably need to take a vacation. Where else could she go? I mean, Afghanistan, maybe?
I was thinking of maybe just dropping her, you know, into the middle of Kurdistan.
It's just like, yeah, she's not having a few good days. Let's put it that way.
Just for the record, I should point out that when this game starts out, she spends a good chunk of it in Syria.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Bad times.
Yeah. Let's see. What else have I been? Oh, yeah. Because I had started – I've actually started playing Trails in the Sky again. Because
very nice.
Pat wouldn't stop talking about the second chapter, and I realized I needed to finish the first chapter.
It won't have the same effect, though, because you don't have to live with the cliffhanger at the end for 3 years like I did.
Yeah.
Well, he could choose to.
Yeah.
But I still want the story to make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But people keep talking, and I really do have to emphasize this. Trails in the Sky is a massive game. I mean, it is big. Huge. Apparently so big, they basically had to divide it up into three chapters over three different discs. So,
dang.
Yeah, it's a big-ass game.
It's the third game is actually more of a bridge arc than anything. The first two games are sort of a self-contained story in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you play through those two and you decide you don't care for it as much, you can stop there and be completely satisfied with what you've played. However, the third is a bridge arc that will simultaneously give you better closure on the first two games,
mm-hmm.
while leading directly into the Crossbell or Calvard arc.
Yeah.
Which
is Trails to Zero and Trails of Azure.
Mm-hmm. I also gotta, I do love the battle system for this game.
Yes.
But I do hate the fact that you go up against common enemies and are basically have to walk up to them before you can even attack them. When you can even be in range for them. Unless, you're using a projectile attack like a flame attack or something.
Or if you're playing as a well-geared Estelle.
Mm. Yeah. But
she has good range pretty much out of the box. If you, you can increase her walking distance.
Mm-hmm.
With better shoes, and there's also equipment that increases her attack range from there. So
mm-hmm.
she's not Olivier, but I would say that she's got the best range out of all the melee characters.
Mm. Oh yeah, I still haven't gotten that far in the game though, because there's so many goddamn side quests.
Yeah. And you just have this compulsion to do all of them.
Yeah. Because the game makes it feel like, I got to do these things or I'm seriously going to screw up.
Well, going to ruin the second game for you if you don't get that perfect completion.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it just gives you a better idea of the of the world that you're in as a whole and the kingdom that you're in. And
mm-hmm.
From where I'm at in SC, there's a lot of nice little touches that, one of the big draws of SC is just seeing where all of these characters that you've gotten to know, all these NPCs from all the different regions, what they're doing now, like 2 or 3 months after the fact.
So I'm doing that, and also because I decided, I kind of like these Falcom people, I decided to go on GOG and get a copy of East, the Ark of Napishtim.
Hmm.
classic.
Yes.
Very nice. RPG.
Also surprisingly violent.
Yeah.
So, you know, the game, you know, it kind of reminds me when it starts out, actually does kind of remind me of, you know, Link's Awakening.
Because, gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, gone horribly wrong. I also had to get used to the fact
that... Then again, every Ys game starts like that, except Origin.
So basically, it's just him unconscious showing up somewhere, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's a recurring trope in the Ys series. If you watch a short-form anime series called Mina Atsumare Falcom Gakuen,
yeah,
they actually play up to that.
Yeah. But, yeah, and so... Yeah, he washes up on this island, gets found by these elf people who have tails, and, you know, finds out that there's this weird sort of, for some weird reason, humans and these people, for whatever reason, have not been getting along, and, you know, it's, and then, you know, you actually get to go out and fight stuff, and then you realize, you know, it's like, the first enemies you run into are like these cute little squirrel people that want to eat your face.
Ah!
It's like, oh, what a cute little squirrel. Oh, my God, he's clawing at my face. I need to attack him, and I'm going to attack him. And, oh, my God, he just exploded into bloody chunks.
And then you realize that the Ys games are basically The Legend of Zelda on space drugs.
Yeah, basically. I mean, every time you attack an enemy, it leaves, like, a trail of blood across the ground.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, it's... a lot of fun, and
Teresa, you've played Ys Chronicle. I know for a fact you've seen this.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And especially when you're geared and you walk into, like, you know, the early parts of the game, they just spray everywhere.
Yes, they do. Those ones. Oh God, that dungeon. Oh God, my kids looking at it, and I'm playing. He's like, Mom, look at all that blood. I'm like, yeah, it's awesome.
Oh man, and
they just really spray when you kill them.
Yeah. Something else, the soundtrack for this game is incredible.
It is Falcom's way.
Yeah. Like, now I realize why Falcom has a whole division made up of nothing of musicians.
Yeah.
Because they've actually, like, they're pretty much their own record label at this point, too, because they put out their own CDs as well, as far as I know.
They do, and they are huge, huge fans of Fair Use.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're also huge fans of power metal, too, because when I started up this game, and, you know, they started as like, is this sounded like, you know, something from like Stradivarius or Symphony X or something?
Yeah.
Well, there was that one time that they had their little foray into space shooters and decided that the main song that... that would accompany it would, I mean, it just would not be worthy if it wasn't more or less a sequel to the Final Countdown.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance.
Final Countdown.
If you ever get a chance, actually, like, go on YouTube and check out the original versions of some of those soundtracks, because, yeah, remarkably good. For the
chip music.
For the limitations that they had.
You go way back in the day, they had Yuzo Koshiro.
Yeah.
He did the soundtrack to the first two Ys games.
Yeah.
But, that's what I've been playing.
Cool. And Teresa?
I've just been playing Yoshi's Woolly World and, you know, my usual stuff. Civilization. I think I'm about 360 hours in now, and I'm still getting so much out of that game.
Yeah.
Nice. And I need to stop because the first snow has officially flown here and it's RPG weather.
Yeah.
So are you going to be joining us in the Trails in the Sky bandwagon here pretty soon?
I may be going back to Final Fantasy 14. That's horrible. I shouldn't do it.
You're certainly welcome to do that as well.
My evil, evil plan, that the top plan is to finish up.
They're doing a Final Fantasy XI crossover event right now.
Oh, no, don't tell me that. So tempting. But I'm finish with, I'm only like 2 hours away from finishing Final Fantasy VIII and have been there for the past, what, 13 years or something? So I might actually finish that
Wait,
up.
Wait, nobody tell her how it ends.
Yeah, spoilers, like, you know, two decades later.
I will say, just, you know, just say it before and just keep spamming roulette. Eventually you'll hit it.
Yeah. Eventually.
Well, I mean, you know, it's random. I mean, when I did it, it took like 3 tries before I got it. And there goes that boss.
Yep. Yeah.
God, that last boss had that one infuriating spell, Hell's Judgment.
Yeah.
That just literally is like 9,999.
Yeah, it's like the you die now button.
Yeah.
Fortunately, you have that option too.
Oh yeah.
Albeit in a much more limited capacity. Yeah. Wonder who thought that was a good idea.
I'm trying to think of someone.
Anyways. Moving on from that, we got some anniversaries that we're celebrating this week. Well, and last week, to be honest. The SNES is having its little birthday. I believe it came out in, what, 1991 over here in the U.S.?
Yeah. 91 was over here, but Super Famicom Japan, that was a 1990 release.
Yep. I feel old. I remember when that first came out.
I remember.
Those were good times, too.
Yeah, I remember seeing that someone playing that for the first time. It was a friend of my mom's. Her kids had gotten one, I think, for Christmas that year. And we went over to their house, and I remember seeing them playing Super Mario World. And just, my mom will tell you, I was just wide-eyed the whole time.
It's like, wow, that looks really nice.
Yeah, because, you know, you got to understand, I was really young and I had not quite, you know, comprehended the idea of, you know,
systems getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I was kind of in an opposite situation because I didn't have that concept of systems getting better, even though I had examples of it. I had, you know, some Atari systems and an NES, so I should have known that there was going to be more steps. Like, even though I didn't realize what better was going to be, I knew the NES was starting to show its age. And then the Super NES came around, and I saw a couple games that featured Mode 7 graphics, and I felt like my face was melting.
Yep.
Yeah, that first time when you play F-Zero, it's like, oh, dear.
That was one of the games we got with ours.
Yeah. And Pilot Wings, even though that wasn't a really good game.
It wasn't, but we loved it because what else, you know?
We didn't have much else.
Yeah, that was true.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom was all about F-Zero, and I was all about Final Fight.
Yeah. Yeah, even though we got the bastardized version of it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know about the arcade version of it until well after we had the Super NES.
Yeah, that's okay. Capcom made amends with a fantastic version of Knights of the Round on the SNES.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, man.
There's an obscure title a lot of people don't know about.
Oh, I remember it.
And the ones who do suddenly want to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we have to do this show, I'd rather be playing Knights of the Round.
Yeah, right?
Besides that, we got the 360. Oh.
10 years ago today.
10 years old today.
Yep. Yet another example of, you know, me getting a system. I got that because I remember this specifically. I got that for Christmas, and I got Mass Effect with it. So you can imagine just how well I got that and Lost Planet with it.
Lost Planet wasn't that bad.
That's some pretty heavy gaming.
Yeah,
you can just imagine. That was a happy Christmas that year.
Yeah.
And you weren't seen again for quite some time.
Nope.
Yeah.
Well, those are hibernation games.
Yeah. And that was the start of probably the longest console generation that we've had.
Probably.
Yeah.
Because, damn.
And I wouldn't mind seeing that become a pattern.
Yeah.
That lasted through high school and college.
Yeah.
Yeah. That
was good shit.
And also, it's fair to mention that on Friday, Windows 1.0 turned 30 years old.
Wow.
Not gaming related, because that piece of crap probably couldn't play anything.
So. That's true.
But
that thing couldn't start my damn car.
Depending on what you ran it on, it couldn't start itself.
No.
So there was that. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah, good times with the 360 and the SNES, and yeah, lots of good times to come, I'm sure. In particular, in December, when Nintendo Direct is going to be dedicated to the new Super Smash Bros. Wii U, the last one that they're going to do regarding this particular game, makes me wonder what exactly they're going to focus on, because, I mean, they've already revealed pretty much all of the DLC that they've got.
Well, there's still more DLC. There's still the full results of the character ballot and, you know, whatever they end up actually putting in the game from there. So
I think maybe it'll be like, you know, a major expansion with, you know, more stages, more music, that kind of thing.
That would be interesting.
That would be worth dropping some more money on.
Yeah. That would be really interesting. I'm not sure if I dare get my hopes up for something that ambitious, but I think we're looking at least three more characters.
Yeah. Yeah, but you wouldn't really dedicate an entire, you know, 45 minutes to three characters.
Three characters, some stages.
Oh, yeah, it's true, because each character has its own accompanying stage.
And they have ways of dragging these things out when need be.
Yeah. Super Smash Brothers coming to the PC. Yeah, like that's going to ever happen.
Heads would melt.
Yeah.
Just.
Just yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be looking forward to that. Maybe we'll see Kimishima finally show himself, but I kind of doubt it. I think he's probably going to stay in the background.
Seems like at least for the time being, it seems like he's going to be that kind of executive.
Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with that at all, but I think if we're going to see him, it's not going to be until E3.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of going to have to show up at E3. Or TGS at the very least. I mean,
I could
honestly see him being perfectly content to sit back and let Miyamoto and Reggie do all the talking.
Yeah.
Mm.
We'll just have to wait and see for that. But you want to run us down this next story, Pat?
Yeah. Word coming out now that Steam sales seem to be changing their format. So we all have our Steam sale behaviors down to a science. If something's not daily or if it's not on the flash sale, you don't touch it. You know, you wait till it goes daily, save maximum dollars. The entire dynamic seems to be changing if a note that got out to Steam's development partners is to be believed. Sounds like the sale prices are going to just remain static for the entire duration of the sale. Different games will be featured, but no fluctuations in prices. So whatever you see on day one, sale will be what you get.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can see that being a double-edged sword. You're really going to want to populate your wish list so that nothing falls through the cracks.
Yeah.
Because games are all going to be at their lowest prices, and they're not necessarily going to be featured.
Yeah.
So.
Man, that is. I don't think I like that.
Really?
I do.
I'm on board.
Yeah. Because I don't have to check the store page every 6 hours anymore. Yeah. You know, if there's games that I want, then just drop them all in my wish list, and you know, then when the sale starts, I'll get a email telling me, "Okay, all these games that you want are on sale. Go broke now."
Well, yeah. The ones that I have in my wish list, I'm already alerted about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, maybe it's not that.
Just make sure you go through every category and stuff. And
see, that's the thing. I'm going to have to invest all the time in which sounds horrible.
Yeah.
And making sure everything is on there.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind, it's not like they're not going to be featuring games. I mean, you can still go there and see all the stuff that they're featuring for that particular day. But, yeah, it's not like. It's not like if you miss them that day that they're gone at that price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I'm okay with this change. I kind of like the, you know, the themed badges and stuff that they do for the sales. I'm wondering if they're going to still do that. Hopefully they do, because those are kind of fun.
Yeah, they got to do something to keep the hype of the event going, because this will, and it's been noted, let's see, I think it was, yeah, Kotaku that... said that one of the problems with this is it's going to kind of take away the whole Christmas morning feel of signing on to Steam and seeing what the new flash sales are or the new dailies are.
Yeah,
that's fair, but at the same time, I still think they're going to find a way to keep people engaged, to keep them plugged into the sale and coming back. So
yeah.
I hope
that would be a good way to do it.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes, but
we really do like seeing what they've got going on every day.
Yeah, I'll probably still end up going to the page multiple times a day.
Yeah,
I just like it because if all the sales are at their cheapest points throughout the entire event, that means that I'm not limited to just the money that I have when the sale goes live. You know, there's a good chance that I'll get paid at some point during the sale.
Yeah.
And we'll be able to dip back into it.
Yep.
At that point.
Yeah.
Mm. That's a good point.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm about.
Yeah. And in more sales news, GameSpot has a little article here where they kind of run down the Black Friday deals for the various... stores, brick and mortar, and online.
Some great deals on there. Like, for example, The Witcher 3 is now $25 at Walmart, or will be on Black Friday.
Let's say now.
Yeah.
It's not an exhaustive list, but it's got some good stuff on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Rare Replay for $10.
Yeah, I'm all in on that.
Yeah, you have to grab that crap real quick. So, yeah, there's some good stuff there. Check out that article. It's worth a read. At least it'll point you in the right direction of see if there's stuff that you're interested in. Plus, there's, on the GameSpot site, there's also individual articles that go into more depth. So check those out as well. Mm. Yeah. Anyways, and less good sales news. You know how much we like Forza 6 and how the fact that it doesn't have microtransactions?
Yeah.
Well, now it has microtransactions.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, Dan Greenwald is, defending this and saying, there's a certain type of person that, these microtransactions are tailored to, and, the game is tuned and balanced for playing without microtransactions, and if you don't like them, you can just turn them off. Well, yeah, that's fine and all, and I did that, but it still feels icky. I mean, really. Yeah. And this is not the first time Turn 10 has done it. They did it with Forza Horizon 2. They added them in, during the course of the game. They did it with Forza 4. Forza 5 had them from the get-go. It's just, God. Why do you hurt
it's me? It's a bad Turn habit. 10?
Yeah.
Yeah, it...
It's like, I paid it. I did give you guys $130. Isn't that not enough?
Considering that the tokens come in bundles that can be up to 100.
Yeah.
I think 130 is enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
230? That's a freaking console almost.
Gosh.
It's like, really? Yeah. Very disappointed in you guys. Very, very. I'm waving my finger, but you can't see me because this is an audio podcast. Yeah. Oh, well. I turned them off, and I don't have to see them again, so at least there's that.
And GT Sport on the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure they'll put microtransactions in that, too. Cynical much?
Yeah.
I don't know. Politically, he doesn't seem to have been as addicted to it.
Yeah, well, I did it.
Like, they're there, but they don't spray microtransactions all over the place.
Yeah, it's the fact that they're still there.
Yeah.
It's, you know, ew. Don't like.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, the only way that'll ever stop is if the entire world got together and decided, hey, we're not going to do this anymore. And
yeah.
Well, you know what the odds of that are.
Yeah.
There won't, because there's... Well, we know the people who are always making these microtransactions.
Yeah.
And we know their parents, too.
Yeah. It's people with more money than sense. Or time.
Yeah.
Or less time, more money, usually.
Willpower. All kinds of things that they don't have.
Oh, they don't have.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about Street Fighter V, which is much more fun than...
Speaking of DLC that you might not have to pay for.
Yeah, this I like.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is DLC that you can just earn in-game just by playing it.
And it seems like we'll get plenty of chances.
Yeah, well, I mean, everything you do in the game is going to give you fight money, so chances are you probably have plenty to buy these characters without having to spend a dime.
5 years of characters if... Yoshinori Ono has his way.
Yeah. Well, he said 5 years support. I'm not entirely sure that means, you know, 5 years of solid monthly releases. But
based on the current scheduling, they're on pace for 46 characters if they do this.
Yeah.
That puts it in the class of Street Fighter 4 at 44 characters, of Capcom versus SNK2 that had 44 to 48, depending on which version you were playing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to be... trending toward the ideal number.
Yeah.
Like we seem to be getting to the point where we're just deciding, yeah, that's pretty much perfect.
Yeah. Well, 40 plus characters is a lot to deal with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a lot of matchups.
And rolling them out one every 2 months should make it easier to balance, too.
Yeah.
Because you're not dumping like 10 characters in all at once and upsetting the game balance wholesale, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think KI had a lot to do with, you know, showing that could work.
Yeah.
Because they've been doing that for quite a while now.
Well, back in the day, like when arcades were our primary means of playing fighting games initially, time release was a big thing.
Yeah, time release was a big thing, but all those characters were done already.
And what?
Yeah, time release was a big thing back then, but all those characters were done and already there.
Yeah.
So if there were balance issues, you wouldn't know it until, you know, they actually showed up.
Well, I'm just speaking more on the time release issue as a way of, like, keeping the game fresh. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, that was... It was something that got us excited. When the next character is going to roll out, you know? Yeah.
Who's it gonna be?
Things like that.
Yeah.
And now we know who the first six characters are gonna be for Street Fighter V, but I can definitely see it. Like it had that same kind of hype with Killer Instinct, like the way they'd put those stingers at the end of every trailer, and
yeah.
I miss those. and the way, you know, the way they were rolling out all the information, it really captured that same kind of energy from those days in the arcades with Tekken games,
yep.
Seeing characters roll out at a time release.
Yeah.
And so if Street Fighter V can tap into that, so much the better.
Yep. Yep. I'm down.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep. Yeah. I really can't wait for Street Fighter V. Have I mentioned that? I think I may have touched on that once or twice on the podcast.
We may have discussed that at one point or another.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll look forward to that in February, the 12th through the 16th.
I almost wonder if it would be in their best interest to roll back the release a bit to January or maybe even December, because if you... there are people playing this game right now.
Hmm.
Like, they reverse engineered the PC beta. They're getting their practice in.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And so, if you're Capcom, you got to be wondering if you, every day that you go without releasing the game is a day that some players are getting practice, and you know, the people who, you know, are going by Capcom's schedule aren't.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of wonder if they're thinking about that and possibly wondering about pulling the release in a bit.
Yeah. I kind of doubt it. I mean, the people that, you know, are motivated enough to download the PC beta and do all the hackery that's required to get it to work in offline mode and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's probably a very small subset of Street Fighter players.
That's true.
So, yeah, there's always going to be a few people who will, you know, go for every advantage that they can, but
yeah,
there's a few of those people who just play it just...
And not necessarily top players, yeah, or top players either.
Yeah, I just want to see what it's like, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're okay to release it in February, and...
It's just interesting to think about.
Yeah. Oh, about a week or so after my birthday. If they moved it down, if they moved the release back to, well, ahead to the second, that would be really nice. But just saying. Anyways, well, this next story is kind of cool. You know, Digital Foundry, aka Eurogamer, have been, you know, putzing around. They picked up one of those Star Wars PS4 bundles, and there's a bunch of classic Star Wars games on there. And
oh, wow.
Three of them are PS2 emulation.
What?
On the PS4. So Sony is apparently working on this, and they reached out to Sony to see, you know, what was going on. And they said, yeah, this is something we're kind of working on. We don't know what form it's really going to take at this point, but for this particular bundle, that's how we implemented it. Yeah, if you like, check out the video there that we have linked, you'll notice they're doing some up-resing. Frame rate is actually better than the original PS2.
That's interesting, because weren't PS2 frame rates fixed?
No.
They weren't?
No, they weren't. Hmm. Yeah. They were just low, because the PS2 was just so damn hard to program for.
Yep.
Yeah. That was one.
Well,
of
no, I mean, I've seen PS2 games that run the gamut from, you know, your 10 frames per second if you were doing sports gaming, all the way on up to like your 50s and 60s on more optimized games. So I was kind of I was just under the impression that they kind of locked the frame rates in, or at least sort of approximated them.
Yeah. Mm. I think maybe in the original, like in the original versions, they might have, but maybe in these ones they're just unlocking it. Who knows? Or maybe the emulator is just good enough that it can render twice as fast as the original one did. Looks nice though. If you like check out that video, you'll see the comparisons between the two. And it's significantly better. It's sharper. It doesn't have that, doesn't feel as blurry as the other, as the original ones did. But then again, this is Star Wars Episode 1 Racer Revenge and Jedi Starfighter and one other one. Yeah, Rogue Trooper.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly the greatest games in the world.
Not late-gen games.
Nope.
No. Well, they were about, like, right smack in the middle of the PS2 life cycle, those ones. So.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I'd label it news just yet, but it's definitely something to watch. Ideally we'll get support for PS2 discs
and digital,
all available PSN classics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Discs would be really nice, especially with how Microsoft implemented their BC for 360.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use discs and, you know,
hopefully it wouldn't have to involve loading the games onto the hard drive, because then there'd be all sorts of licensing issues, and I really don't want backward compatibility for a system with PS2's library to be hinging on what they can license. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a reason most of us still have our PS2 sitting around.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All five of them.
Seriously?
Yes.
Wow. Well, I had six, but I sold one of them off.
Wow. I just moved mine into deep storage, and deep meaning inside of a footstool, so it doesn't suffer any dust damage. I don't think it would ever happen, but that's just one you can't let go, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah, I really should pick up another PS2 just in case. They're dirt cheap right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Unless you get a Japanese one.
Yeah.
Those have kind of dropped off the earth.
Yeah, finding those are a little bit difficult. Unless you go to, like, you know, Yahoo Japan auctions, and then you can find them there pretty easily. Yeah.
And I mean pay.
Well, mostly for shipping, I mean.
No, Japanese PS2s have become really hard to come by, from what I've seen.
Kind of surprises me. You know, you got yours while it was hot. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was almost right after that that it was almost right as news came out that they'd stop producing PS2s.
Mm.
Not a whole lot happened with the North American ones, but the Japanese ones became a hot item.
Yeah.
Mm. And I'm not sure exactly how that worked, but the last time I checked, prices were still pretty high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really hoping that Sony decides to implement this in the right way. And the right way being, let me take my disc, put it in the PS4, and just play it.
Yes.
Yeah. Or at the very least, if you don't want to load the game off the disc, you know, just, you know, install it to the hard drive and
directly,
not have to download it. That's the one thing that kind of bugs me about the Xbox One, is that you do have to download it, even if you're putting the disc in. You can't install it.
No, just it dooms certain games to an eternal lack of support.
Yeah. 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 You know, we'll follow this one, I'm sure this will be a feature of firmware version 4.0, which probably isn't too far incoming at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Anyway. It's
certainly showing signs of it.
Yeah, we're already starting to talk about it, so I imagine we're probably not too far off, probably like summer of next year, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yep.
So. That'd be a great thing to have happen during any kind of release lull.
Yeah. Great thing to announce at E3.
Yep. Just,
yeah.
So. Great thing to roll out at E3.
Yeah. Watch PlayStation Network just die.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is PSN we're talking about. Yeah. Damn it.
Yeah.
And here I thought I was onto such a good idea.
Yeah. Lovely, lovely. Yeah. Okay, speaking of things that are lovely.
Just get all their servers bludgeoned.
Yeah, as usual. And speaking of lovely things, YouTube is starting to push back against copyright strike abuse, which is something I'm kind of glad to see.
Oh, yeah.
Well, considering that their previous policy seemed to more or less be just stand back and let copyright holders do whatever they wanted to content producers. You know, this is any step is a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, as it stands right now, they're going to kind of pick and choose who they're choosing to defend there. But,
yeah.
You know, the ones that they do choose to defend, they're going whole hog on. They're, you know, basically even going to be paying legal costs for them.
That's up to like 1 million founding fathers.
Yeah. Wow.
That's some pretty good backup.
Yeah. This has been a real problem for, like, people who are, you know, who primarily do, like, reaction channels.
Yeah.
Because they can be really sort of discriminatory considering on, you know, how popular or how many views a particular group, a particular channel has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Markiplier hasn't really had this problem, but then you'll have some of the smaller ones like, you know, Jinx or Blasphemous HD, who, you know, has had a copyright strike on his channel and been restricted, you know, putting up to 15-minute videos and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's really irritating.
And one of the weird things about all this is that Atlas, of all companies, seems to be one of the big villains doing this. And this is a company that we have a lot of nice things to say about, but in this case, they're clearly the bad guys. They've been going after some really, really small YouTube channels with, I would say, negligible subscribership.
Yeah.
And just hitting them with copyright strikes only to lift them later on. It seems to me like, just from what I'm hearing, that it's the case of the left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing.
Yeah.
And Atlas Japan is going after all these small-time YouTube channels. And then those channels are talking to the people at Atlas USA who are making it right. Or getting the strikes removed.
Yeah.
This is kind of... It'll be interesting to see if that situation comes to a head with YouTube. And it's honestly one that needs to.
Yeah. Well, it's, I think YouTube is kind of going for kind of a trickle effect, just having the threat that, their money could be behind pretty much any YouTube channel who happens to complain.
Mm-hmm.
And gets struck by one of these, egregious copyright claims don't have any basis. It might, coax companies into starting to behave a little bit better.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's the inverse of what the RIAA and the MPAA have been doing with peer-to-peer networks all this time. Just pick a few... small targets, hit them hard, and let it act as a deterrent.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing that kind of thing turned around, and I'm just off to the side here with my popcorn. I want to see how this plays out.
Yeah.
RIAA, one of the most evil organizations in America.
Yeah.
Because I want people to understand, artists actually don't make all that much money off of album sales.
Nope.
They make most of their money from merchandise and concerts. Sure. So,
and that depends on, the deal that you've signed. Because if you've signed a crappy deal,
your contract
you wouldn't even
get
that.
Any damn good, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I found so funny back in the day when the RIAA was trying to campaigning against Napster and piracy. Because they tried to make it out like, we're just defending our artists and their intellectual property, when you realize that, those artists don't actually make all that much money off the actual album sales. So,
Yeah. There's a great book about that.
At the very least, this should see the end of the era where, copyright holders are throwing strikes around with impunity.
Yeah. Yeah, that and the circuit court decision about that, about the whole Dancing Baby video. You remember that one?
I
remember the video, don't remember the decision.
Yeah, well, so it turns out that the circuit court decided you have to take fair use into account. You can't just throw copyright claims around when you're, doing this kind of stuff, because the whole thing about that particular video was that there was a Prince song playing in the background, which is what the little baby was dancing to, and you couldn't really hear it all that well, but they still claimed it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a that's not an infringing work.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, he's notorious.
Yeah.
For trying to defend his copyright.
Yeah. It's kind of washed up, by the way.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. Anyways.
And he's gone completely insane.
He really has.
Yeah. It's kind of sad to watch, actually. Not the great musician that, he once was when Purple Rain came out. Yeah, anyways. We're
totally
old. Yeah. So Jade Raymond has a new studio, apparently.
Yep, Motive.
Motive, and they're joining up with EA to make what they're describing as a kind of an Assassin's Creed style game.
Yeah.
Or at least something that could be a competitor.
Yeah. The first thing that I thought about when this story got out was, it's really odd that Jade Raymond, of all people, is getting on board with a project like this, given her position on the AAA market.
Yeah.
So either she thinks that Assassin's Creed is kind of on the decline.
Yeah, I think pretty much everybody thinks Assassin's Creed is on the decline at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's become kind of stale. The first two games were excellent, and then it kind of went downhill from there.
Really fast.
Yeah, well, when they started...
I was going to say that she just feels really confident that, backed by EA's money, she can make something superior.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that too.
I mean, or both, you know.
Yeah. You know, she's... she's a smart woman.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of creative ideas. I'm pretty sure if anyone can take on Assassin's Creed, it would probably be somebody who was involved in the original game to begin with. So,
part of me wonders if maybe the reason... We know, of course, obviously, her feelings about the AAA market, but maybe if she's worked out some sort of deal with EA where she can sort of... I guess something where... not only will she be able to work on this Assassin's Creed competitor, but they'll probably give her funding for some other projects as well.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, despite EA's, you know, really egregious policies every now and then, well, most of the time, okay, the majority of the time, sometimes they do some good things. Like, you
rarely.
Know, Unravel. They're publishing that. Wow, that game looks good, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Regardless of what it sometimes might look like, they are very careful where they put their money.
Yeah. 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 Sometimes I think they're a little too safe for their own good.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. like they constantly keep putting money into stuff that, you know, the Battlefields and the Maddens, those constantly make money every year.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever this new project Raymond is working on, yeah, let me see it, because I'm down for something that's better than Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already an early pencil in for EA's show next year at E3.
Yeah, I think we'll probably see something at the very least. Yeah. Not sure how much of it, but we got a few months to get something ready.
Yep.
And finally, our last story, and an interesting one.
Setsuna of Sacrifice and Snow has a release date. It'll be, at least in Japan, it will be out in February, which is ungodly fast for a game that was just announced at E3.
Yeah, it was just announced at E3, but...
they probably had already been working on it for...
Yeah, they would have had to have been working on it at least 6 months, maybe more.
Yeah.
All they had to show at E3 was concept art, though. So
yeah, now we actually got, you know, screenshots and footage, and it looks really good.
Looks good.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
For such a low budget, too.
Yeah.
I mean that. Right. I love that sort of art style they're going for, where it's obviously that they don't have a heavy graphics engine, but they're compensating for it with an awesome, you know, art style.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very watercolorly, very...
Very paint. PS1.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very PS1 without being jaggy. It's very, very, very nice looking. And it's got...
But I think the PS1 era is where it's drawing almost all of its influence from.
Well, you know...
which I welcome, absolutely.
Yeah, if you go on on RPG Factory's website, you know, they wear their influence on their sleeve.
Yeah.
We are inspired by all the great old games we played as kids, and we want to continue that tradition.
Yeah.
And from what we've seen with Setsuna, that seems to be what they're going for.
Yep.
And not just visual, but gameplay-wise as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I It explicitly uses ATB 2.0, which is the exact battle system from Chrono Trigger.
Yeah.
So first of all, no random encounters.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm definitely
everything
cool
happens
with
right
that.
There on the map. Very positional, which I like.
Yep.
But I thought Square Enix thought ATB was dated.
Yeah, well, that's because Square Enix are idiots.
RPG Factory apparently doesn't feel this way. So.
No. Nope.
Thankfully, they have a little bit of autonomy to not have to make their games feel modern. Although,
nope.
You know, ATB 2.0 isn't exactly a bad system. It's actually very fun.
No.
Yeah.
I think you can draw a very strong, like, evolutionary line. You have your Final Fantasy 4 through 6.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have your Lunars.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Grandia. Mm-hmm. Well, then you have Chrono Trigger. Then you have Grandia.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then landing pretty much anywhere on that evolutionary line is a good thing.
Yeah.
And so if Tokyo RPG Factory aims to put Setsuna on that anywhere on that chart, I'm all for it.
Yep. And let's be honest here. Setsuna of Sacrifice in Snow is just a feeler for an eventual Chrono sequel.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much. No, I mean, even visually, you could see, you know, some of that concept art with the clockwork stuff and... Yeah, the idea is definitely there.
Yeah.
Well, there's no question. If Chrono 3 happens, this is the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is no question at this point.
Yeah.
And I just hope that I wish it a swift localization and hope that it sells well enough to make a point to Square Enix.
Yeah. Because, the more I see of this game, the more I want it.
It may be too late to save Final Fantasy 15, but it's not too late to save the Final Fantasy 7 remake, damn it.
Yeah. And, well, we also have Final Fantasy 16 to look forward to, which may or may not end up sucking, depending on how Square handles things from going forward.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll have Final Fantasy 15 in hand before they even start talking about that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't come out. When does that come out?
15?
Yeah, it's not that far.
I don't think they've announced any sort of date for it, but I could be wrong.
Hmm.
I could see it maybe squeaking at a holiday 2016.
Hmm.
But I'm going to look here out of curiosity.
Yeah, I don't think they announced anything at PAX or anything like that. I think maybe it's still up in the air.
Hmm. Yeah, it says... Right. Yeah. At Gamescom, they said Final Fantasy 15, 2016 global release.
Yeah. So sometime
let's
in 2016.
Let's see if they can hold to that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we don't have much 2015 left, but there's still a whole 2016 left. So they have to land anytime in those 12 months, and they'll make their date. And it will probably land with a thud for us, at least.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll sell like crazy.
Probably sell like crazy, but...
It's a numbered Final Fantasy game. Even the bad ones do really, really well.
Yeah, but...
Globally, even.
Yeah, but nothing I saw from Final Fantasy 15, the footage I watched, the gameplay walkthroughs that I saw, none of it was interesting to me.
Nope.
It's a setting that it just doesn't appeal. I don't know. It's just bland.
I mean, okay. Back when we were doing the video version of the Day Zero update, I played the demo for one of the for one of the shows that we did. Could you tell how bored I was while I was playing it?
Mm-hmm.
Like just from watching the footage?
No, that didn't come across in the video.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just I don't know.
Like honestly,
it's like when I think about, the fantasy genre. You know, I think about knights and dragons and incest and I said that out loud.
You did.
Damn you, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I don't think about cars and
I know
blimps and things. That's not fantasy. That's stuff we have right now.
It's off-putting and common.
Yeah, it's like, Nomura.
Yeah, it's crossing the streams, you know.
I mean, some of the cityscapes looked okay, but then when you got in, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you get in, and there's like stores all around, neon signs. And like,
riding on a bicycle with a basket on the front?
Yeah. It's like, no, this is not fantasy. This is final, you know, final they, modern life. Is what it's
and they don't get the RPG part of it right either.
No.
No.
Yeah.
You don't ride a bicycle. You ride a freaking chocobo.
Yeah.
Like,
and I love how they just tried to...
Final Fantasy XV, I felt like I was playing a bad attempt at Devil May Cry or something.
Yeah. And I love how they just try to shoehorn in some of the elements that you'd expect from a Final Fantasy game. Like, you know, there's like random chocobos running around for no apparent reason. Or, you know, in this world, like, Moogles run schools of some kind. How does that even work? It's like...
It's the litmus test.
It's a token, really. And that's all it is. And people are going to easily pick up on it.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the whole Final Fantasy name just doesn't really mean a lot. Up until they did 14 Realm Reborn. And then, you know, there's spinoffs. Yeah, as you say, the spinoffs have been really, really good. But
and I'd also love to see a single player game set in Eorzea, speaking of 14.
Hmm.
There's a lot of potential for something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you tell we're really disappointed with the Final Fantasy series in general? Yeah.
This was a segment that was covering really good news about a game that we're all, as far as I know, genuinely looking forward to. And the moment it went off the rails, it just turned into a scathing indictment of the people handling the Final Fantasy series.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to apologize for it, and I don't think we should, but it is really telling.
Yeah.
As RPG fans that something is not right at Square Enix.
Yeah. And we will continue to take them to task until things change.
Right.
You know, we may be a few voices here on the internet, but, you know, eventually...
there's enough of us.
Yep. There's enough of us. We'll be heard. And I think that's probably as good a place as any to call it a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's for me.
Yeah.
All righty, then. So, I am Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
And we'll see you all next week.